Mother Earth. Thank you for all your abundant gifts. Good morning, Father Sun. Thank you for feeding all living things on Earth. Thank you, Plant Kingdom. Thank you, trees and plants, for converting the sun's light into edible foods that we can consume and digest, and for providing oxygen in the air that we breathe. Good morning, water. Thank you for being 75% of our body. We are one, and we bless you and protect you because we cannot live without you. Good morning, Animal Kingdom. Thank you for your companionship, your beauty and splendor, and for your sacrifice of life so that we may eat and live. Thank you, Great Spirit that moves in all things. Thank you for our lives and for the opportunity to be here and to be of service in this sacred earth garden of life. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Welcome. Hi, welcome to Shaman's Keep. This is Caroline Wise King, your host, and I have a wonderful guest with us today. Her name is Sandra Ingerman. She's written 8 books on shamanism, of which she is probably best known for Soul Retrieval and Medicine for the Earth. She teaches workshops internationally on shamanic journeying, healing, and reversing environmental pollution using spiritual methods. She has trained and founded an international alliance of Medicine for the Earth teachers and healers. She is also a licensed marriage and family therapist, a mental health counselor, as well as being certified in acute traumatic stress management. She's recognized for bridging ancient cross-cultural healing methods with our modern culture. And she was awarded the 2007 Peace Award from the Global Foundation of Integrative Medicine. Sandra is my beloved teacher, and I hold her in highest esteem. She taught me how to do soul retrieval and extraction work and has had a profound influence on my life. So it's with great love and honor that I welcome her to our show. Sandra, it is such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Hi, Caroline. It's so great to reconnect with you and be part of the show today. So thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thank you for being here. I've told everybody you're such a wonderful teacher. And I have to tell you, the 5-day soul retrieval workshop that I attended with you in 1994 was the most life-changing event of my life.
I hear that truly, from people a lot.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we did so many processes, you know, releasing things and doing a fire ceremony. And it was just healing and empowering. It was just awesome. Would you speak to our listeners a little bit about using ceremony to release beliefs that are holding us back?
Yeah. First, I wanted to kind of segue into, you know, a little bit weaving in what you just said about it being such a powerful experience for you. In classic shamanic cultures, and I'm not trying to over-romanticize shamanic cultures because they definitely had their own challenges, but people in a tribal culture knew what their value was in the culture. And they also knew if they had stepped out of harmony, what might be creating an illness or might be creating a problem. In our culture, in a Western world, we don't always do the personal work on ourselves so that we understand what's causing different problems in our life and, you know, what might be creating looping themes in our life. And so in bridging shamanism into a modern day culture, it's really important for people to not just show up for, quote, shamanic healing work, but to be willing to do some personal work on themselves. And hence the fire ceremony, which we did in the soul retrieval workshop, and releasing challenging beliefs, blocking beliefs, is an important part of that personal work that we all have to do. We all were born with amazing amounts of creative potential. I know a lot of people believe, oh, other people are creative, but I'm not. We were all born with creative potential, and we all have the possibility to improve our life and help to improve the health of the planet right now. But we really need to believe in ourselves. And through society or our family systems, oftentimes at a very young age, we pick up, it could be even nonverbal cue that makes us feel like I don't have anything to share, or I shouldn't shine my light too brightly in the world, or I'm not a creative being. I need to just learn how to behave and follow the rules and just get by. And that's creating a lack of meaning in people's lives, because there is such a passion for life that we were all born with. And so it's important for us to identify what are those core attitudes and blocking beliefs that might have come to us, again, through society and our family systems that make us believe we're not creative. I don't deserve good things. I don't have the ability to create what I want in my life, things like that. Mm. And then once we identify them, we can use ceremony. Ceremony is a very powerful way to create change in order to start that process of releasing, which is, very powerful. The nature of fire is to transform, so releasing into the fire has been used for thousands of years around the world in shamanic cultures.
Mm. Well, it certainly was powerful when we did that ceremony, and I just felt such a relief after I had released my my talisman or whatever we would call that, where I put
right.
together, I put together a symbolic gift to the fire that carried all of my feelings and emotions and beliefs about what was holding me back, and it was just so freeing when I carried it out on the floor, it felt so heavy in my hands that I thought I wasn't going to be able to carry it to the fire. And when I threw it in and the fire blazed up around it, there was just this, like, release mm-hmm. of feeling so free. And, it's just awesome. So we need to get back to doing ceremonies like that in our lives and knowing how to do them.
Ceremonies create change, and that's how they've been always used, and there isn't a right way to do ceremony. I write about fire ceremonies and all my recent books, all my last four books that I wrote, because ceremonies are so so healing for us, and especially releasing that which no longer serves us anymore. And again, we can, I give outlines and kind of some key principles for people to keep in mind as they perform ceremonies. But one of the freeing things is also to know there's no right way to do ceremony, too.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
We're bound by so many rules and regulations in our day-to-day life.
Yeah.
And we have to understand that the Great Spirit is not quite that rigid.
Mm-hmm.
That he understands what's in our heart,
Exactly. And, the Great Spirit, the creative forces of the universe, the power of the universe works with our intention. So once mm-hmm. we throw an intention out into the universe, like, I'm ready to let go of my creative blocks, and that's that intention of putting something into the fire that represents that, then the creative forces of the universe, the Great Spirit, takes that intention and starts to work with you on that. So a path is created where your path is lighted up and ways are shown to you to be able to step into your personal power.
Mm. Yes, it is. Now, I'm a great believer in creating sacred space to do a ceremony in or to do a healing in. Whatever I'm doing with working with spirit, I always call in the directions and, you know, say the prayers to the directions, and I call in Father Sky and Mother Earth, the ancestors and everything. Would you say that that's a good thing to do before a ceremony?
Yeah, you know, shamans did a lot of preparation work before they did any healing work or before they did any ceremonies. And one of the things that, you know, I find is I've been teaching shamanism around the world for 30 years now, so mm-hmm. I've really gotten to see a lot of how Westerners can approach shamanic work. And sometimes, you know, we're so in a rush, you know, we're all so busy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we try to jump into shamanic work or jump into a ceremony after we've had a very stressful day, or we've been driving in traffic, or we've been answering mm-hmm. emails or whatever. And then we go, God, I'm not sure that felt so powerful to me. And I think that shamanism works with spirit, and we need to get into the spiritual aspects of ourselves and put mm-hmm. our ego aside, that personality part of us aside, and allow ourselves to shift more into an expanded state of consciousness where we work in partnership with the helping spirits for our own healing, the healing of others and the planet. And so mm-hmm. some time out to create sacred space and to move into an expanded state and to unburden yourself from the, you know, the challenges of the day. I use the metaphor, it's like when a ship goes to sea, you have to pull up the anchors. And when we do ceremonial work or spiritual work, we have to pull up what's anchoring us to the physical, egoic world of personality. We have to pull up those anchors so that we can connect on a deeper level with spirit. And so creating sacred space by giving gratitude for your life and mm-hmm. Giving thanks to the ancestors that brought you into the world, and earth, air, water, fire, which are the elements that give us life, you know, in this mm-hmm. lifetime. And if you work with helping spirits, the helping spirits that you work with, cleaning yourself up and making sure the space you're working in is clean, maybe burning some candles or some mm-hmm. incense that, you know, makes it feel special to you, so that you can step out of the world of the ordinary into the invisible worlds in which shamans have always worked in.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think that's really important. And in your book, Medicine for the Earth, you gave a little way of centering that is so beautiful. Breathe in light, breathe out light, mm-hmm. breathe in love, breathe in peace, breathe out peace, breathe in the power of the universe, breathe out the power of the universe, breathe in harmony, breathe out harmony. I can just feel my whole body just calming down and centering when I do that. And that's beautiful. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. And, you know, again, it's really important for us to find the ways that work for us. And breathing has been used for God knows how many thousands of years, in that our breath has always been known to bring us back to a place of center. And breathing will always take us into a deep place, especially when we do shamanic work, because shamans don't see through their eyes, they see through their hearts. And mm-hmm. breathing always takes us into a loving heart space. So, you know, it's really beautiful to work in that particular way.
Yes, I love that. And you also talk about transmuting our food, because we are getting so much food that is contaminated somehow. It's genetically mm-hmm. altered, or it's been brought in from some foreign country, and we don't know whether it was grown with the fertilizers that were banned here, or the, you know, the insecticides that were banned here.
So we really
need to be able to transmute our food so that it's healthy for us and in harmony with us. Would you tell our listeners a little bit about how you do that?
Sure. One of the key principles of the Medicine for the Earth work that I teach is our perception creates our reality. And so if we really believe that we're eating toxic food and drinking toxic water, that is what we're eating, because, you know, that's our perception, and our perception creates our reality. And so giving gratitude for the food that you're eating is a great way to transmute and to see the light. Everything that is alive has a spiritual light, and so beyond the physical form of the food that you're eating and the water that you're drinking and the air that you're breathing is spiritual light, and to recognize the divine light that you're absorbing and ingesting so that you can live. An incredible story that a student shared with me, if I have a minute to share this story. She took a Medicine for the Earth workshop with me many, many years ago, and before she ever got involved in spiritual work, she was at some event, and she was standing on a very long line for the women's restroom. We all know how long the lines can be.
Yes.
And this woman was standing next to her, and she just started to tell her this amazing story that she grew up in Cambodia, and when there was an overthrow of the government, her family had to flee in the middle of the night with no food, no clothes, no money, no anything. They just had to flee for their lives. And they were walking, and they realized they were really hungry, and they came to a very dirty rice paddy. And they didn't see dirty rice. They saw food, and they ate it, and they were so grateful for it, and they felt fed by that food. And then they came to a river where there were dead bodies floating in the river, and there was blood in the river. And they were thirsty, and they didn't see the bodies. They didn't see the blood. They only saw pure water, and they were thirsty, and they were so grateful for the water, and they drank the water, and nobody got sick from drinking the water. And, you know, this woman's minding her own business, standing on the line of the restroom, and this woman tells her this story. And she said, "We were so grateful when we needed food, we found food. And when we needed water, when we were thirsty, we found water to drink, and we were so grateful." And, you know, what a teaching that is, because, again, you know, for thousands of years, there have been spiritual masters who have been able to ingest poison and to turn it into light. And if one single person on the planet can do that, it means that we all have the ability to do that, because there's only oneness, and every gift that somebody has on the planet, we all have that too. And so we do need to live more conscious on the earth, and we do need to stop polluting the earth, the air, the water that gives us life. You know, it only makes common sense if you're dependent on elements for life. You don't put pollutants in it. But while we're waiting for consciousness to shift and for people to really take care of the earth and honor the earth, there is work that we personally can do to make sure that we thrive during these transformative times. And part of that is gratitude. The practice of gratitude, seeing the beauty in all things, is a transformative element, and seeing the light in everything that we absorb and take in is a transformative element. So every time you drink water, give thanks to the water for the nurturance that you're receiving, so that you may thrive and experience the light of that water. Every time you eat, give thanks for the bounty of the food that comes from the earth, that allows you to thrive and not just survive, and experience the light from that food as you breathe, experience the light and give thanks to air. And the sun is such a teacher of unconditional giving, because it gives and gives and gives and doesn't ask for anything in return. So the more we can be in gratitude as we absorb the elements that give us life, and to see the light, experience the light, perceive the light, then you'll be taking in the nurturance. So that's a powerful practice to work with.
Oh, it is. You know, someone told me years ago that the one distinguishing thing about humans is that we have chakras in the palm of our hand, and that we can actually pass light through our hand onto things. And so I hold my hand over my food when I'm saying my blessing and thanking all the plants and animals that gave of themselves so that I might eat and live. And I'm visualizing that light is flowing from the palm of my hand and into the food and bringing it into harmony with my body. And it's always in harmony with me. I don't have, I hear people around me talking about, oh, they've got heartburn, they got this problem, that problem.
I'm like,
bless your food, you know.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, back to your perception creates your reality. You know, I teach a lot of workshops, and so I'm around people all the time. And you know, I eat out more than I oftentimes would like to. It's always interesting to be in groups of people, whether it's at a restaurant or a training or at some event. And, you know, you have people who go, oh, my God, I can't believe how incredible this food tastes. And then somebody else at the table might say, I really don't like this food. And, you know, there's always that perception that can shift. You know, there's always people who see the light and the beauty in things. And then, you know, people walk into a room and say, oh, my God, I can't believe how friendly everybody is here. And then you have people walk into the room and go, God, the energy seems really dark and heavy here. I think we've all had that experience where two people can be in the same place, in the same situation at the same time, and perceiving two completely different things. Mm. So as we learn how to consciously work with shifting our perception so that we're not denying what's happening in the world, but we can also look behind what's happening on the surface and to acknowledge and perceive the light and the beauty in everything that we take in and with life around us, your life changes dramatically when you're able to do that.
Yes, you know, I've come to believe that it's a choice. We can actually choose to be happy, and some people keep waiting on someone or something out there to make them happy. and until that someone or something happens, they tend to choose to not see, you know, to perceive things as dark or not friendly or whatever.
Right.
And we have to realize that we have a choice. We can decide to be happy, you know, no matter what it.
Right.
I mean, people have been in prison camps like during the Holocaust and all.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that survived, a lot of them had made a choice to be happy in spite of all the terrible things that were happening, to be able to see the good. And
absolutely.
So we have to keep looking for that good. And
we grew up in a culture that taught us to stay in a kind of a childlike stance of somebody else is going to take care of us and somebody else is going to make it better for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we look at what's happening on the planet right now, we can really see that we're shifting into the time where people need to take more of an adult stance and to move out of the victim and to claim their own personal power and creativity so that we don't keep on saying, my life isn't working, somebody needs to make it better for me right now.
Mm-hmm. I've found that true with people sometimes who come for healing work. You had mentioned earlier in our discussion about how sometimes they don't realize that they need to participate and do something to help themselves. And I had a guy come to me one time, and he had serious problems, I mean health problems. And I did the extraction work and everything. And then I told him, we need to sit down and talk a little bit. There are some things that you might need to be working on in your life. And he said, well, why do I have to do that? Just fix me.
This is an ongoing conversation, and I teach teachers. I train teachers how to teach shamanic workshops, and in the new teacher training that I'm doing, this is an ongoing discussion on our Yahoo group, because, you know, it's true. People come and they say, I don't want to do anything. Just fix me. It's like going to a doctor. Just give me a drug and make it better. Yeah. And I don't have to take any responsibility for my life. And I, for myself, I see that there's a difference between curing and healing. When we go to a shamanic practitioner and ask for help, whether we receive some ceremony that involves extraction, soul retrieval, power retrieval, depossession work, that's a cure. And it's the client who then has to do the healing work on themselves of what changes do I need to make in my life that will create long-term healing from the ceremony that was, you know, done in my behalf. Because, you know, I can do healing work, but I can't change anybody else's life. And a lot of people, it's very frustrating for a lot of us out there doing the work, because a lot of people don't want to take any responsibility. Some people don't know how, and that's one of the beauties of doing some long-term work with people instead of just the one-time healing ceremony is through shamanism. There are so many tools that we can offer people to help them move forward, like, you know, looking at their creative blocks and obstacles and doing a ceremony to release those. That's just one example, but there's so many things that we can share with people to help them with that healing, that long-term healing in their lives.
Oh, absolutely. This gentleman that I was telling you about saying, just fix me, I sat him down and I said, no, I can fix you, but it's not going to hold. It's not going to last unless you take the time to deal with the anger that you're not acknowledging, the forgiving of people that you're still carrying around revenge, a hit list on, and giving thanks for all the blessings that you have and that are coming to you now. And he looked at me, you know, but he sat down and we did several sessions where we worked through some of those issues, and he had a healing at that point. I mean, you know, everything, he stayed healthy. He didn't get suddenly a year or two later come running back, oh my God, I'm sick again. You know, right. I have this again or that again. We have to work on ourselves, all of us. And if we don't deal with those negative issues, they will just come right back and bite us, you know?
Right. Well, it's also, you know, it's also looking again at simple common sense. You know, for example, I use this example a lot, and it could seem like a pretty base example, but if you do an extraction on somebody who has lung cancer and you really help them move forward in their life, and then the first thing they do is pick up a cigarette, you know, what have you done? What kind of healing work have you done? And, you know, that's a very dramatic and, you know, exaggerated example, but, you know, basically that's what we're looking at of, you know, doing soul retrievals on people who were abused in the past and they go home to an abusive relationship or to an abusive work situation, or, you know, people who grew up in a family where there was some kind of substance abuse going on and you know, they are still abusing substances in some way. There are just really certain things of basic self-care that, you know, we have to look at how much stress do we have in our lives? What's our lifestyle? What changes in our lifestyle do we need to make? Simple things, you know, it might, I think that sometimes people get so overwhelmed with how much change needs to happen that they get paralyzed in the process. And so I'm always trying to get people to look at what is one tiny, tiny shift that you can make tomorrow that will start to put you on a path of well-being instead of looking at, you know, having to leave work or a relationship, but, you know, working gradually step by step by step into a healthier lifestyle, and then people don't feel so overwhelmed in the process of it.
Yes, it's difficult, especially if they are still in a situation of a lifestyle that is no longer a part of this. The future that they want to have. So some changes come along, but they do. If we are in a time, I think the universe has said, okay, you've been teenagers and kids long enough. Now grow up and start taking responsibility. The body is an amazing instrument. It can heal itself if you give it half a chance. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how are you eating? What are you drinking? What are you doing with your body? You know, take some responsibility.
Right. Absolutely. So, it's a powerful message. And again, I think the key is I think people are so stressed out right now that oftentimes people are afraid to look at their lives because it's like, oh, my God, so much needs to change and I don't know where to begin. And so teaching people really simple, simple beginning steps so they start to feel confident of, oh, yeah, I can make this simple change. And the next week, yeah, I can add this simple change. And the next week, I can add this simple change. And, you know, before you know it, you're on a roll of looking at how to move your life back in a positive direction.
That's a great way to look at it and a great way to do it because it's just overwhelming sometimes when people look at their lives and they say, it's too much. I can't do anything about my life. I just have, you know.
Right,
So you do baby steps. You do baby steps.
I'm a baby. I've always been a baby step kind of person. I always like climbing mountains, and if ever I looked at the top, I got so overwhelmed, I'd be paralyzed. I couldn't move forward. It was, oh, I can't do it. But I found that if I just look at the next step in front of me and don't get caught up on where the ultimate end is, I find that I can pretty much climb anything.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Also, there's ways that we can transmute the space, like our home, to clear it and cleanse it, and or where we work to have it more harmonious. Would you describe a little bit about how people might be able to improve their environment right around them?
Yeah. Well, you know, again, it depends on the environment that you're in. You know, many people in a work setting can't go in and start burning incense and drumming and rattling. And so, you know, I talk about really simple things like, number one, honoring the space. Every home, every office where you live has a soul. It has a spirit. And honoring that space when you go to work, bringing in some fresh flowers into the office, or a pretty painting if you can't hang it up in the general office, you know, a nice picture of nature, you know, nice colors and positive images that you can put up, you know, by your desk, so that again you're looking at the positive side of life in one's own home. One can burn a candle, or, you know, there's so many beautiful sprays on the market right now, rose spray, lavender spray, and you can go through a room and spray you know, a nice organic essence. and give thanks to the spirit of your house. You know, I do this on a regular basis. Every solstice and equinox I go through and I give thanks to the spirit of the room, and you know, I spray all the sacred objects that I have in the house, and I talk to the spirit of the land where I live all the time, which is very life-changing when you realize that the land where you live actually has a spirit and that it can support you and it can give you advice on how you can live your life more in harmony and make your life easier and more positive for you. So honoring, you know, the spaces where you're in and surrounding yourself with beauty to remember the beauty of life is a real way to transmute, you know, any space that you're in.
Oh, that sounds beautiful. Yes, and I believe we should surround ourselves with as much beauty as we can anyway. If there's something inspiring about looking around and seeing beautiful things. So it's just really important that we look at our surroundings and say, well, what could I do here and make this prettier, make it feel better, and do those things.
And it doesn't take any money to do that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about collecting more material objects, which is not the point, but picking some flowers from outside or, you know, making things that have beautiful colors and making things yourself that have love in it. So, like, I like to paint, but I paint like a 5-year-old. And, you know, I mean, nobody would buy a painting that I made, but I put so much love into it, and I love working with colors. And so in our house is decorated with my paintings. And, you know, people come in and you know, look at them, and they can feel the spirit coming through them, and they're not looking at my lack of ability, you know, as far as drawing detail goes or anything like that. And so, again, that's a place where we can add more of a creative spark in our lives of making things that have spirit. I'm a spinner. I spin on a spinning wheel. Fiber into yarn. I teach people, I have a friend, we teach spinning workshops together where we look at how to bring spirit from the invisible realms into what we make. And so, you know, knitting, crocheting, woodwork, you know, making things that, again, you're not attached to what they look like, but the spirit that's coming through them. And as you have them in your house or at work, again, it's the spirit that's coming through them uplifts you and uplifts everybody who comes into their presence. And then right there, you've been a transformative force. Where we go into the principle of how to heal, create change, transform, transmute by presence. So
that is powerful. I believe that the great spirit or creator is a creative force. And so I always advise people that are in a healing mode to do something creative with their hands. Mm-hmm. And any like the things you're talking about, because it literally brings that life force energy back into their body and through their hands and all, and it begins to activate something in them that really helps the healing process. So that's wonderful, and it's art is about the feeling it inspires in the person that's viewing it. It's not about technique. It's about, you know, how did it make you feel? Did it uplift you? Did it make you take a breath and say, oh, wow, look at that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's very powerful.
It's a very powerful force, and it reminds us about it, and when I say remind us, it doesn't remind our mind. It sparks something inside of us on a very deep level that helps us to remember that we are a vessel of love and light as the creator we're the creative forces of the universe or the great spirit or, you know, whatever words, vocabulary that fits your particular beliefs. We are a reflection of that creative force of the universe, and we also came here to be a vessel of love and light. So, you know, that stimulates that when you do something that you love, you become a vessel of love, not a personal kind of love. It's an unconditional, impersonal, creative force that starts to flow through us.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Well, Sandra, I wanted you to talk a little bit about the medicine for the earth. I know that you are passionately involved in healing Mother Earth, in clearing polluted waters, and helping the earth to recover from some of the damage that we've done.
Right.
So talk to us a little bit about medicine for the earth.
Well, you know, there's two phases of the medicine for the earth work, and some of one of the phases we've been talking about. The key theme of my work is it's who we become that changes the world, not what we do. Of course, we all need to learn how to change our behavior, such as recycling or doing things on the ordinary level, but we also need to learn how to do our personal work so that we are a healing presence in the world, and learning how to transform the energy behind our problematic thoughts and feelings and attitudes so that we're radiating love and light throughout the planet instead of sending hate or anger or frustration or despair. We came here as human beings to experience a full range of emotions. And so, yes, we get angry, we get joyful, we get blissful, we get, you know, into places of despair and depression. But there's an energy behind that that we could work with. Shamans understood the difference between sending energy and expressing energy. So we need to learn how to express what's happening in our lives, but then not send more anger, more hate, more separation out into the world, but learn how to work with the energy behind our thoughts and our words, and to become more conscious beings, and to give gratitude, and to walk on this great earth with honor and respect. And then another part, you know, that's that phase of personal work, and there, of course, are many components to that besides what, you know, I've just shared, that some of it. Then the other part of it too is that as human beings, we're dancing a paradox. On one level, we're these egoic human beings that are going through life changes, you know, life challenges, and experiencing a whole breadth of adventures on this planet Earth. But who we are beyond our skin, if we drop our body and we drop our mind, is we are spiritual light. We are that pure reflection of the creative force of the universe. And as we learn how to tap into and experience our inner spiritual light and let that shine forth, light naturally transmutes and transforms on its own. And we've done a variety of scientific experiments of polluting water with chemicals and having people become just beings of light, not doing anything, not sending anything of the water, just being light. And the water always comes back towards a state of balance in the experiments that we've done. There's an old esoteric principle of as above, so below, as within, so without, which means that our outer world is a reflection of our inner state. As we learn how to experience the divine light inside of ourselves and shine that light into the world, everything around us starts to transform. So a very simple exercise that people can try is just to imagine being a walking star. And stars don't send light. They don't effort, like I'm too tired to shine today. Stars simply radiate, and we're all transformed by the beauty of the night sky. So mm-hmm. that's something very simple people can try.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah.
I'm a star. Yes, I can just shine. That's
children,
who I am.
Children
I'm light.
Do that really well.
Oh, yes, I'm sure. They haven't had all the restrictions put on
yeah.
them to make it, oh, well, you're not a star. What do you think you are? You
or know? Don't shine but, your light too brightly. You'll
yeah.
stand out too much. That's a big one people got at an early age.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness. Well, we have to be light. That's who we are. That's what we are.
Exactly.
And I understand because your book, you stress that everything is light. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah. And so if you go through life seeing everything and everyone as light, then it's a beautiful world.
Right. Again, we go back to the old time teaching, our perception creates our reality. So
mm-hmm.
it's a powerful teaching to hold.
Oh, it really is. Well, I want people to know how to reach you. Would you give us your websites and
mm-hmm.
how to, and they can find your schedules for classes and everything online, right?
Yeah, I have a website, sandraingerman.com, sandraingerman.com. On that website, there are articles on my work. Everything is for free, and, you know, you can just get kind of a summary of some of the shamanic work and medicine for the earth work that I teach. I also write a monthly column called The Transmutation News, where I try and teach people how to stay inspired during these transformative times and not move into a place of despair. And, of course, my training schedule is on that, too. And I also have a website, shamanicteachers.com, where people can find somebody local in their area so they don't have to travel to, learn about this powerful work.
Mm. Okay. And, of course, you have 8 books out, and those are all available on Amazon.com and
absolutely.
Any of the bookstores, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And,
okay.
And, yeah, and again, there's also articles people can read where they can get a real summary view and can learn some practices that they can start with, which is, we all have to find a starting place somewhere to keep inspired. And, you know, we just have so much power to create positive change right now. As we all engage in spiritual practices, finding the practices that work for us, because we're all unique and we're not all going to feel attracted to the same spiritual practices, but the spiritual practices that we do make a difference in the world right now, and that's where we all have power to create change in the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think so many people are waking up now and they are just beginning to realize that we have power, you know,
mm-hmm.
because we were never taught that we had power. We were always taught just follow the laws, follow the rules, do your job, you know.
Right.
Be
don't
a good
shine
citizen.
Too light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but people don't realize how sometimes maybe they are their thoughts and their perceptions are cursing themselves and their life environment and all because of negative thoughts and negative feelings about things instead of looking for the good and praising it.
Mm-hmm.
To find the things that are wrong and to focus on that.
Right.
So we really do have to shift that consciousness from looking at what isn't working to looking at all the blessings we have and being very aware of it and giving thanks. Because like you said, the gratitude, to me, that opens the doors to all the universal love and joy to flow
Absolutely.
Into us.
Absolutely. Gratitude and love and appreciation is such a powerful transformative force. I mean, it just transforms everything. So,
Okay. Well, we're running out of time here, Sandra. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yeah, and thank you, Caroline. And I really want to thank you for the brilliant work that you're doing. You're really a brilliant practitioner. And thank you for being out there and being a healing force in the world.
Oh, thank you. That means so much to me. Well, thank you, listeners, for joining us today. Until next week, and next week I have Brant Secundo is going to be on the show. He's head of the Dance of the Deer Foundation and the Huichol teachings out of Mexico. You'll really enjoy him. Until then, may the sun kiss your face, may the waters bless your body, and may all nature sing in your presence. Thank you.